Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me in the Bettors Box. It's BangTheBook.com's MLB betting podcast for Monday, July 17th, presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use that promo code BTBRadio. Good for a $10 free bet just for signing up, and an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Got a lot of stuff to chat about here as we get past the first weekend of the second half of the Major League Baseball season. A few things before we get into today's show. Our Monday, Tuesday, Thursday format is back this week. Really looking forward to tomorrow's Tuesday Takeover show. I'll be joined by Mark Meltzer, who's a freelance writer out in Las Vegas, covering a lot of the goings-on with the casinos and the hotel properties that are out there. So we'll talk with him about the current state of Vegas, about sports betting out there, his thoughts on legalization. Should be a really, really fun show with him. Really looking forward to that one, especially since I just got back from Vegas on Wednesday night. So I have some thoughts of my own to throw out there, of course, but really going to rely heavily on Mark, who's out there, you know, getting all the news and information that's going on. So it should be a really cool Tuesday Takeover broadcast. Then we'll have another edition of the Bettors Box coming up here on Thursday of this week. Don't forget about my picks analysis article every day over there at the website, also the Daily Fantasy piece. Hopefully you like the new look homepage. It's a cleaner look. I think it's a lot more streamlined for us in terms of updated content and updating our content. It helps us on the back end as well. But lots of stuff coming your way as we go throughout the rest of the football offseason. I mean, I've got plenty of college football season win totals that have gone up. I posted 4 yesterday to finish up the SEC West, going to work on the SEC East this afternoon. And then tomorrow, hopefully all those will be up. We've got lots of those team previews coming your way with those season win total picks. So plenty of good stuff there for college football. I'll have the Open Championship preview coming up here. NASCAR, as always, we're going to start doing some NFL stuff as well as we start to turn the calendar over to August and get into the preseason for the NFL. It's amazing how fast this year has gone by, but time flies when you're having fun. We've had a lot of fun here at BangTheBook.com and on Bang the Book Radio throughout this year, and hopefully we can continue to do that here as we go through the NFL season. We did get signed up for the Super Contest last week when we were in Vegas, so we'll have some more Super Contest content for you here as we go throughout the season with the written stuff. We'll have a recap of the regular Super Contest, also the Gold Super Contest, which is a new thing for this year. Then we'll have some segments on the show as well. So I'll give you something to look forward to once we get into the NFL season. Don't forget about those contests that are going on over there at bangthebook.com, our daily streaker contest, also monthly pick of the day, and those cash prizes for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and top number of units won. Tons of stuff going on right now here over the next several weeks as we get ready for the football seasons. So hopefully you're doing the same thing by checking out those sportsbook reviews, seeing where you may want to sign up here for the season. And as I mentioned last week, DSI has gone independent now with their shop, BetDSI, and then also BetLuckies. They're no longer under the Chris umbrella, under the Chris family of books. So another book for you to shop around at. So if you already had an account at Bookmaker, didn't want one at DSI, well, you should see some different numbers and prices out there between those two shops. Of course, shopping around means everything here in this industry. As far as today's show goes, we'll go beyond the box score, talk about some of the series that just concluded. We'll look down the lines. I've got several leans here for Monday night. We'll see which ones of them actually become hardcore solid picks, but I do have a lot of thoughts here on tonight's card. Four questions for the Monday mailbag, and then what I'm looking at here for the week ahead. So go ahead and get started with a look beyond the box score and talk about this series between the Red Sox and the Yankees. We're seeing money come in against the Red Sox here today. I presume we'll see money come in against the Yankees as well, because these two teams played 43 innings here in this four-game series, 16 innings on Saturday, doubleheader on Sunday. Not a big surprise to see people looking to play those situational angles here on Monday, but a really rough start coming out of the break. You know, these two teams were pretty well represented in Miami for the All-Star game, and you come out, you know you have that doubleheader on Sunday anyway, but then you wind up playing 16 innings on Saturday. And it wasn't just a doubleheader on Sunday. It was a split doubleheader with a 1 o'clock, 8 o'clock start time. That is a miserably long day at the ballpark for these guys. Fortunately, in that Sunday night game, it was a quick one with a 3-0 score. It took less than 3 hours. I don't know the last time a Red Sox-Yankees game took less than 3 hours, but it feels like it was a very, very long time ago. So at least there's that. Both of these teams were able to get on to their next series in fairly short order there on Sunday night. The biggest story coming out of this series is Michael Pineda. Torn ulnar collateral ligament. Looks like Tommy John for him. that's a big blow for the Yankees. You know, this is a team that was already having some depth issues because of injuries prior to the All-Star break. Now they add in another injury situation to the starting rotation. You know, CC Sabathia just came back over the weekend, pitched pretty well, but Sabathia is a guy well on the wrong side of the aging curve. Lots and lots of workload built up on that arm. Missed some starts here and there over the last few years already. So this Pineda issue is a big deal. Now we'll see what the Yankees do. We'll see if they go into the trade market, if they do dabble in something like Sonny Gray, if they do just go to, if they do just look the rental route with somebody like Trevor Cahill. You know, there are a lot of options for a team like that because, you know, they're not necessarily worried about spending money. I know they've gotten more cost conscious of late, trying to build from within. I give Brian Cashman a lot of credit for doing that, but this is a team that can withstand, you know, giving up some minor league talent for a rental player. So unlike other teams that are out there that don't want to do that, the Yankees have more options available to them in the starting pitching market. So we'll see if they decide to add something. I certainly think that they need to, just to give themselves some more depth, especially because while Masahiro Tanaka has pitched a little bit better here of late, he's still a ticking time bomb with some elbow trouble as well. If he's a guy that goes down and it happens after July 31st, the Yankees are in a really, really difficult spot. They're very fortunate that Jordan Montgomery has come out and pitched well. Luis Severino has fixed his command issues, so he's been very good this year. But they need to get themselves some depth. They need to get themselves some help. We'll see what they do and what they're willing to give up in order to do it. And again, this is a team that, you know, has started, or an organization, I should say, that has started to get some better minor league depth, some better minor league talent. Maybe some of those guys would be available to make a run here this year because the AL wild card is very soft right now. And the Yankees are in good position for that. There are a lot of teams below 500 in the American League right now that have a lot of catching up to do on that wild card spot. So the Yankees could be very, very active here over the next 2 weeks in terms of looking for some starting pitching help. And what's really nice for them about this series here, they did split this series, and the bullpen did blow the game on Friday coming out of the All-Star break. But then the Yankees bullpen did not allow a run over the next 34 innings in this series. You know, so or over the next 33 innings, I guess I should say, since the Red Sox, of course, you know, didn't need to hit in the ninth inning of Sunday Night Baseball. But that's really significant because this is a bullpen that has been in a state of flux. Dellin Betances has not been as sharp as usual. Aroldis Chapman was hurt, came back. You know, he's not really been as dominant as you would expect to see a guy who throws 103, you know, be able to do. So it's really big for them here to get some confidence rolling with that bullpen later in this series. Now, the Red Sox bullpen technically didn't allow any runs in this series. The only runs coming off of a relief pitcher came off of Doug Fister, who pitched on Saturday in that 16-inning game. So he was forced into action. So, you know, both bullpens pitched really well here. I do still think both bullpens, if they can find it, should go out there and get themselves help, particularly the Red Sox. They need help there in middle relief, somebody to bridge the gap to Craig Kimbrell. That is something that they should be looking at, especially with Tyler Thornburg out for the year now. But both of these bullpens, very, very good. So there were some good signs in this series. Luis Severino and Chris Sale were both dominant on Saturday. David Price and Masahiro Tanaka looked good in the nightcap on Sunday. Rick Porcello pitched well for the Red Sox. That's a big key for them as they go forward. CC Sabathia was pretty decent coming off of his injury. So lots of good signs for both of these teams. I think the Red Sox are your division winner. I think the Yankees do wind up locking down a wild card spot. So we're probably looking at two playoff teams here when these two teams meet again later in the regular season. One thing I do want to mention here, for the Boston Red Sox, you know, this is a team that probably could be playing better than it is. For a while, they had some home run to fly ball disadvantages. They were one of the worst in the league in that department. Here in this series, they pick up a split, but they were 3-for-38 with runners in scoring position across the four games. Now, the Yankees worked a whole heck of a lot better at 7-for-34, but they were definitely better. The Red Sox were 1-for-10, 1-for-10, 0-for-11, and 1-for-7 here in this series. Now, that was off after their offense really was on a high note coming into the All-Star break. So a little bit of variance, a little bit of negative regression possibly there with that. But I do think that the Red Sox are a team capable of putting a little bit of distance in this division based on the fact that Price looks better and based on the fact that I think this offense has a ceiling that it hasn't quite reached yet. How about the Atlanta Braves? They swept the Arizona Diamondbacks. I mentioned Arizona as a fade team coming out of the All-Star break. Hopefully you played that angle here because the Braves won all three games in this series. Diamondbacks, I mentioned this coming into the second half on last Thursday's show, had a 331 batting average on balls in play with runners in scoring position. That was the third highest in Major League Baseball. In this series, the Diamondbacks just 7 for 29 with runners in scoring position. So they had chances. In fact, they had 27 at-bats with a runner in scoring position in the first two games of this series, went 6 for 27 in those. And you know, that's what happens. You know, that's how you lose a series. That's how you get swept, is you don't have – you're not on the positive side of variance in those high-leverage plate appearances. So if that's a case for the Diamondbacks here going forward, that's why I want to look to fade this team. You know, they did not get very good pitching in this series. The bullpen had some problems. Archie Bradley and Randall Delgado with a couple of blow-ups. And they faced R.A. Dickey, Mike Foltynewicz, and Jaime Garcia. So it's not like they were facing Kershaw, Hill, and Wood or something like that like they did a little bit before the break. They were facing guys that were hittable. They faced a couple of guys on the platoon side where they've been very good against right-handed pitching, haven't been as good against left-handed pitching. That runners in scoring position regression is a big thing. Ultimately, baseball is a game of variance. And if you do well in those high-leverage plate appearance situations, you're going to do well. If you don't, you're not going to do well. And home runs have kind of clouded up that picture a little bit this year because the long ball is so prevalent. But still, baseball comes down to when you get hits and when you don't get hits. Arizona's gotten hits in a lot of key situations this season. It's been able to mask some of their lackluster pitching. Well, if that changes, Arizona's a team that can gradually go back to the pack. They have dropped five straight. A Rockies-esque fall would not surprise me for them right now. The Rockies, you know, still obviously in pretty good shape because they built up a big cushion. But the Diamondbacks are a team that I will continue to look to fade here as we go throughout the next few weeks because I expect them to have lesser fortunes in those really important plate appearances. As for the Braves, with that sweep, they get up to 500. They still have a minus 34 run differential. The Twins and Royals, also teams that are 500 or better with a negative run differential. The Twins are actually a game over 500 with a minus 65 run differential. Royals at 500, minus 27. So the Braves are a team where we could see some negative regression for them. But again, this is a team that just got back Freddie Freeman. And they've got, you know, some pitching upside here, and we'll see what happens, you know, with the trade deadline for them and who they decide to move. But the Braves may just be one of those teams that can hover around 500 despite a run differential that doesn't look all that appetizing. How about the Chicago Cubs? They bludgeoned the Baltimore Orioles in this series. Now, they did only win Friday's game by one run, but after that, it was a complete blowout of a series. 27 runs across the three games here for the Orioles, or for the Cubs, excuse me, against Orioles pitching. Orioles pitching is bad. You know, I've talked about this throughout the season. It was something that we talked about coming into the year as well. You know, the one thing about having a really good bullpen is that you need to be able to use it. It's a situation that has plagued the Chicago White Sox this year, and now a situation that is plaguing the Baltimore Orioles, where the bullpen is the strength of this team, and they cannot get to it with a lead. And it's just, it's been brutal to watch guys like, you know, even Dylan Bundy, once regression hit him, Ubaldo Jimenez went in this series. He was terrible. Wade Miley was not good. Kevin Gausman got shelled again. The Orioles are in bad, bad shape because not only is this a team that needs to be a seller, but there aren't a whole lot of pieces to sell. They've got bullpen arms that can go. If they want to move Zach Britton to get an impressive collection of prospects from somebody, that's something that they need to do, in my estimation. But Peter Angelos, very reluctant to sell, very reluctant to throw in the towel in any season. This is a season where you need to do it. You know, you don't make Manny Machado available, but you do move some of those bullpen pieces. Now, of course, the problem is, then as you get into future years where you still have Machado before he gets his $350 or $400 million deal somewhere, you know, what do you have? You know, you don't have a starting rotation. That would be the biggest thing. If they move Zach Britton, they do it to a team that has some high upside pitching talent in the minor leagues. I don't know how many teams there are that are out there like that right now, but that's what the Orioles need. They need to get some starting pitching. And that was very evident here in this series. And you look at the Cubs in this series, and I'm curious to see what the perception is of the Cubs going forward. You know, this is a team that has a massive World Series hangover. I mean, they won the first title for this organization in 108 years. What's left to prove? What's left to do? So you come into the next season, maybe a little bit fat and happy, as the expression goes, something like that. Whatever the case may be, the Cubs have too much talent to play like this. And you're starting to see signs of it here where the offense has really gotten going. The starting staff, you know, still has its issues, and they'll get John Lackey back here in this next series. But they pick up Jose Quintana, who was absolutely brilliant on Sunday. It helped that he had a big cushion and the Orioles were just ready to get out of there. But he was outstanding, struck out 13 in that one. You know, Wilson Contreras is a massive offensive upgrade and a defensive upgrade to Miguel Montero. Montero was a cancer on this team. They got rid of him. It's a very good thing for a team. You know, because when you're accustomed to success and you're struggling a little bit, and you've got some of these guys that are a big-time problem and a big-time headache for you, that just doesn't help anybody. So to get Montero out of there is a big, big help. And Contreras, you know, responding by coming out here and hitting really, really well. Bottom of the order was good. Jason Hayward had a couple of hits in all three games. Addison Russell had a big series. The question that we have to answer here coming out of this series is, are the Cubs back? Are the Cubs on track? Or are the Orioles just that bad? And I think it's probably a little bit of both. So I'll be curious to see what happens with the market prices for the Cubs. The Orioles, you know, this is a throwaway season for them at this point. Hopefully in the process of throwing things away, they can get themselves some pieces and parts that help in the minor leagues. Dodgers swept the Marlins. They just keep going. The Dodgers look unbeatable right now. I mean, if you're going to face Kershaw, Wood, and Hill in a playoff series with McCarthy in support, Kenta Maeda, the depth of this lineup, the depth of this bullpen, the Dodgers right now just, I mean, they look like a team that cannot be beaten. And I imagine that at some point they'll cool off a little bit, but I don't know who's going to be the team to step in front of that train. One other series to look at here beyond the box score, the Colorado Rockies, they dropped 2 of 3 against the Mets, gave up 27 runs in those three games. They did salvage the finale on Sunday, knocking Steven Matz around the ballpark. But the Rockies go back home to face the Padres now. You have to wonder if they get back on track, because they had a couple of series prior to the All-Star break to get this thing turned around. They played the Reds and the White Sox, really struggled through those as well. So we'll see what happens here as they get back home to face the Padres. But I did want to mention that the Rockies remain a fade team away from home. Go through our down-the-line segment here. Lots of small moves on Friday. A lot of people easing back into Major League Baseball. Plus, the lines were up for a while, so the odds makers and bookmakers had a chance to set things up, you know, make sure to move these pretty quickly here. And there's always some uncertainty there when you come out of the first day of the break, sort of wondering what may happen with some of these teams. But we did see some movers here. James Paxton was a heavy mover for the Mariners. They took on the Chicago White Sox. That line closed as high as $2 at some places. Again, the White Sox have taken on a little bit of money against lefties, but with James Shields on the hill, you know, no one wants to bet the White Sox in that situation. That was also post-Quintana trade. You know, that's a sign for the White Sox, and they knew it was coming, and David Robertson's going to go here at some point as well. But that's a sign for the White Sox that, you know, we're cashing in our assets that we have for this season, and we're looking ahead to 2018, and some people probably bet based on that emotional appeal a little bit. And who knows, maybe it is something that we'll look to play on here as we get closer to the trade deadline. Saw some Marlins money come in on Dan Straley. That was against Brandon McCarthy and the Dodgers. Not as pronounced as usual. The Dodgers did wind up winning that game. Not a surprise to see the market back Straley a little bit. I wrote extensively about Straley in my piece there on Friday. That's something I will revisit again here when he takes them out on either Wednesday or Thursday, whichever day he'll be back on the hill. The Braves were a flip favorite against Taijuan Walker and the Arizona Diamondbacks. Now, I thought that maybe this would be set up for a Diamondbacks fade throughout this series. That was not the case. I'll talk about that here in a second. But you know, to see money come in on R.A. Dickey is a little bit surprising, because Dickey is a guy that you kind of know what you're getting from a knuckleballer, and maybe this was a fade of Taijuan Walker. Maybe this was a fade of Arizona coming out of the break. But I was a little bit surprised to see that move, especially because Walker has been really good away from Chase Field. Chase Field is a tough place to pitch. Grip is hard to come by. You know, it's not a forgiving park at all. So I'm not entirely surprised to see Walker struggling in his first season down there. He's been pretty good on the road, so that was a surprising line move there for me. But as it turned out, the Braves won that one en route to the sweep. On Saturday, we saw some steam come in on Luis Castillo and the Cincinnati Reds as they took on Max Scherzer and the Washington Nationals. That backfired miserably. Nationals hung a 10 spot there in that game. They hung a ton of runs pitching here in this series. But the big thing to take away from this one is that the Reds are still taking on money, even against elite starting pitching. I mean, I thought the minus 170 line wasn't that bad on Scherzer at Great American Ballpark. But that number came down. I believe he closed in the minus 145 range. And again, all you can ask for is consistency here when you're looking at these line moves. Been a lot of consistent action coming in on the Cincinnati Reds. And to see it there against Scherzer, pretty significant to keep in mind as we go throughout the next few weeks here. Huge move on Alex Wood. That was against the Miami Marlins and Jose Urena. Urena is pretty much the only guy that the market won't back with the Marlins. That was the situation here. Wood actually went from about minus 160 to minus 200 in that game. He may still be underpriced, which is kind of remarkable for a guy. I don't care about pitcher win-loss record, but he is 11-0. And that, you know, entices a lot of people to come in and get involved. And that was the spot there on Saturday. Saw some more money come in against Ervin Santana. That was on the Houston Astros, but the Twins were able to take that game. Again, regression should hit at some point for Ervin Santana. It's kind of been creeping in a little bit here. At least it was prior to the All-Star break. But, you know, again, you just bet based on probability. You bet based on likelihood. And the likelihood is that a guy like Ervin Santana is going to fall off a little bit here sometime soon. So you keep playing on it, hoping that it happens, and sometimes you get burned, like you did there with Houston if you laid the chalky price. Huge flip favorite. This is a move on Patrick Corbin. Fade of Mike Foltynewicz, fade of the Braves. I don't know what exactly this one was. Didn't work at all. Patrick Corbin is a guy that, you know, the market hasn't really looked at in a favorable light here throughout most of this season. So I was surprised to see that move. Maybe it was a lineup thing that I missed, but that was a very significant flip favorite move with Arizona. They lost the game, of course, as we know. But, you know, Foltynewicz is a guy that's been backed quite a bit early in the season by some of the sharper outlets that are out there. Haven't seen it as much here of late, but it was something that we saw on Saturday. Money came in against Madison Bumgarner. That was his first start back. That was against Jehulis Chacin and the Padres. Not a surprise. I mean, Bumgarner is going to be priced based on, you know, what his reputation is, but he was off for a long time, had a shoulder injury. Wouldn't surprise me if it takes him some time to get back into the mix. Certainly didn't surprise the betting market either, or certainly wouldn't surprise the betting market, I should say, given that move there on Saturday. But we have seen the Padres take on money several times here lately as well, so it may just be a continuation of that. Huge Corey Kluber move on Saturday. He wound up closing about a minus 220, minus 230 favorite in Oakland. Terry Francona blew the save in that one, so those that laid the heavy price with Kluber were not rewarded for their efforts. On Sunday, the market hit that bad Cubs price. That was Jose Quintana's first start. I believe Bookmaker opened at minus 133. Pinnacle was minus 140. Closed in the 155-160 range. That was a terrible number against Ubaldo Jimenez. And the Cubs bludgeoned and blew out the Orioles. The wrap up that sweep there in that one. So a flip favorite situation in that Washington-Cincinnati game. They play again today, so that wasn't the series finale. That was Tanner Roark against Homer Bailey. So Bailey became a flip favorite there, and I, for the life of me, I don't get that move. You know, Tanner Roark is a guy that I'm looking to back here early on in the second half. Very low left on base percentage, 63.7% in the first half, lowest among qualified starters, which I think is like 3.1 innings per game played or something like that. I don't know. I don't remember exactly what – 3.1 plate appearances per game played for hitters to qualify for the batting title. I'm not sure. I can't remember off the top of my head what it is for the ERA title. But in any event, the point I'm making here is that Roark got very unlucky in those leverage situations in the first half. I think he's a much better pitcher than he's shown. I've talked about that throughout the season. He wasn't great in this start by any means, but he was good enough. Nationals scored 14 runs for him. But Roark is a guy I will look to back. I think the market will look to fade him, but he's a guy that I'm looking to back. So we'll see what happens with his lines as we go forward a little bit here. The market rightly made Oakland a favorite in Sunday's game against Cleveland. That was Trevor Bauer, Sean Manaea. Bauer didn't even make it out of the first inning. Manaea pitched well again. Sean Manaea is one of the most underrated starters in baseball to me. I've talked about him several times in both the picks analysis piece and my daily fantasy piece. He's just underpriced, completely underrated. Sweepy arm slot, tough to pick up if you don't see him a whole lot. Really, really good pitcher. And the market was off on that price. Hopefully you jumped on some line value there on took Oakland in Sunday's game. Saw some money come in on Jeff Samardzija against Trevor Cahill. That was Giants-Padres. Samardzija money, ERA to exit discrepancy. You know, we should see that quite a bit here as we go throughout. But Trevor Cahill's been really, really good. He's going to be a hot trade name, low base salary. Teams may have the chance to sign him to some sort of affordable extension if they do acquire him. Really good arsenal, heavy on curveball and changeup, throws the fastball for strikes, has some good separation in his velocities. Cahill's been really strong. And I don't think he's a guy that I want to fade. Even when he gets traded to a new team, I think he's a guy that's going to be a pretty good fit, regardless of where he goes. We'll look at some line moves here for Monday. Seeing money come in on Chris Tillman and the Orioles, that's a fade of Andrew Cashner. Andrew Cashner is going to get money bet against him every single start the rest of the season. I don't care if his ERA and xFIP actually do wind up at a point where they're sort of equal. People do not believe in Andrew Cashner. To back Chris Tillman, though, I mean, more power to you. I won't be doing it. I can't touch Baltimore, but I certainly understand looking to fade Andrew Cashner. Marcus Stroman flipping into a favorite here against the Boston Red Sox and Eduardo Rodriguez. There's a lot going on with this game. I tried to unpack all of it in my picks analysis piece. Rodriguez coming back off the DL, first start since early June at the MLB level for him. Did not pitch well in his three rehab starts, one at AA, two at AAA. But this is a guy that I've found to be very underrated for the Red Sox. So maybe he was just working on some things in the minor leagues. Maybe it was just BABIP variants. Maybe it was some bad fielding. I'm not entirely sure. But he didn't pitch well in his minor league rehab starts. So the market not looking to go on him. But if you look back to when he came back from his injury last year, also had that knee problem, took him a few starts to get back into the mix. He was really good from that point on. And he is pretty decent here at the outset of this season as well. Now, again, though, coming off the DL, not a situation where I want to look to back a guy. In fact, I will rarely do it. But with Marcus Stroman here, his BABIP is about 100 points higher with the bases empty than it is with runners in scoring position. A 12% increase in left on base percentage this year. He's getting very fortunate in those key situations, and that's what dictates the game. That's what dictates an ERA. So for Stroman, I think there's some regression here. But, again, lots of buts in this game. Eduardo Rodriguez and the Red Sox, that huge series against the Yankees over the weekend, played a ton of baseball. The bullpen got significant work. How deep can Rodriguez go in this game? You know, just coming back to the big leagues. So many wagering angles at play. But if the Red Sox become a plus money team here and that's where the line is trending, I might have to play back at it because there are some of those regression signs with Stroman. And also the Blue Jays just can't seem to get out of their own way right now. They just can't seem to put anything together. They're not getting hits in those key situations. But a lot going on here with that game. One of my favorite games to break down that we've seen all season long, especially because I like to do that situational handicapping. And as I mentioned, something that hasn't worked as well here on Major League Baseball this season, it works a lot better in basketball and even to an extent football. It works very well in hockey as well. But you've got so many angles at play here in this game. So the Red Sox are a lean for me, especially with where this line has gone. But again, lots of things to consider. The fate of Julio Teheran is active out there in the marketplace again as people are looking to bet against him. The market has hammered the Detroit Tigers today. This number has moved about 40 cents at Pinnacle. Jordan Zimmermann against Jason Vargas. People expecting Jason Vargas regression. Tigers right-handed heavy lineup. That's a really significant move there. Jordan Zimmermann is not a guy that I have any interest in backing, but a huge, huge move. And to see that on a Detroit team that people have looked to fade a lot throughout the season, very interesting to look at that one. I think we'll see some Twins money hit the market here. You've got Brian Mitchell going for the Yankees against Edelberto Mejia for the Twins, but this is a similar situation to that Red Sox series, long, long series for the Yankees. And then, of course, the Yankees had to travel from Boston to Minnesota. You know, you play baseball all day or at the ballpark all day. At least it was only a three-hour game in the nightcap. So you probably get to the airport around 1 or so, get an hour back going to Minnesota, but you're still getting in very, very early. We'll see Twins money here. I don't know to what extent, but we will definitely see Twins money. I just don't know if I can back the Twins here with Mejia and the fact that you know they're not a very good team right now either. So some Monday leans that I'm looking at here. I'm looking at Milwaukee. You've got Brent Suter on the hill against Chad Kuhl in this one. At PNC Park. It's a good park for Suter. You know, a guy that sits 85 to 86 from a left-handed arm slot. He's got plus command, limits home runs. It's a ballpark where if you make a mistake, might stay in there. For Chad Kuhl, higher strikeout total, but lots of walks this season. You know, throws with good velocity, but doesn't really put up the strikeout rates that you would expect to see from a guy that sits in the mid-90s. But he's erratic, and the Brewers are a very patient lineup. So I think you get Milwaukee getting into this Pittsburgh bullpen fairly early. Milwaukee's bullpen has been very good. Suter's been good in his last two starts. Now he's a member of the rotation, 13 strikeouts and 12 and a third. There's something to be said about that. You know, there's something to be said about a lefty. See 85, 86 with a fastball anymore. Everybody's throwing in the 90s, except for guys like Kyle Hendricks or Zach Davies, something like that. Pretty much everybody's sitting, you know, in the 90s. And a lot of guys are sitting even higher. So do you get that 85, 86, you're getting sliders and breaking balls in the low 80s and high 70s. That's tough on a team. It takes some time to adjust to that. Pirates haven't seen Suter a ton. So I do like Milwaukee here in this spot tonight. As I mentioned, Boston, a lean that I'm looking at. The Padres could be worth a shot as well. The Padres, big dog Luis Perdomo against Germán Márquez out there at Coors Field. I am not laying minus 165 on Colorado unless it's Sonny Gray, or unless it's John Gray, excuse me. It's not John Gray tonight, so I'm not interested in laying that price with the Rockies. The Padres could be worth a look. And, of course, the Giants aren't a bad look tonight against the Indians. They just had a shit show of a weekend against Oakland. Josh Tomlin on the hill tonight against Matt Moore. You know, if you want to play the Giants as a home dog, I certainly understand why. But it's a pretty decent card. Lots of options, lots of things to break down. One of my favorite cards so far that we've seen of the season because of so many of the different angles that are in play here and so many of the different matchups that we're looking at. Four questions this week in the Monday Mailbag segment, a couple of them from at NBC Podcast on Twitter. First question, would love some talk on sources of umpire data and a variety of ways to interpret it. We've got some pretty good umpire data over at bangthebook.com/picks/umpires that you can look at, over-under percentages, runs and strikeouts and walks per game, stuff like that. Some good stuff over there. Also, swishanalytics.com is a good site. One of the things that I like, they have some of the same data that we have in terms of some of the more basic, you know, like I said, over-under, you know, who wins, who doesn't, stuff like that. But Swish Analytics has a segment over there on their umpires data called Boost Stats, which shows the increase or decrease in frequency of strikeouts or walks. So you'll have a guy, for example, I believe the example in their help section is, you know, you'll see a 1.5% boost or 1.45 boost in strikeouts with a certain umpire. You know, and then it explains over there what that means, how much of a strikeout increase that actually is. You know, so obviously some umpires have bigger zones than others, and that's a really big thing. And that's, you know, what I look at in terms of interpreting data is if you've got an umpire with a big zone, you know, hitters have to expand the zone. So what that means, there's more called strikes. There's more guys hitting balls that are out of the premium hitting areas. You know, guys that have to go up above the letters, guys that have to go down below the knees. You just don't make quality contact when you have to swing at pitches like that. Guys with small zones, you know, hitters are getting things right in the hot spots. You know, they're able to sit middle in, middle away, you know, hit pitches where they want to hit them, and then take walks on the borderline stuff. You know, so that's what you want to look to interpret there. You know, it's not just strikeouts and walks. It's quality of contact. A bigger zone means lower quality contact. A smaller zone means higher quality contact. And, of course, you can break it down on an individual level. If you got an umpire with a big zone or a guy that has a lot of strikeouts in his games, you know, you look at the pitchers with the high chase rates, the high outside the zone swing percentages, guys that can get hitters to chase because hitters are going to have to chase. A big zone means you're behind in the count more often. So you've got to expand the zone with two strikes as well. So there's a lot of stuff that you can look at there in terms of umpire data. I don't use a whole lot of it, to be honest with you. But I know a lot of people that do. I know Kyle Hunter uses it extensively. So it's out there if you can find it, you know, if you can find what you're looking for. One of the things that does disappoint me a little bit is that Baseball Savant used to have a really extensive database of missed calls. But Baseball Savant, now part of MLB Advanced Media, they don't want to give their umpires a bad look, so it's gone now. But that used to have a great database of percentage of calls missed, stuff like that. I imagine that stuff is out there somewhere, and maybe Baseball Prospectus has it. I didn't have time to check it here before the show. But you know, there is umpire data to be found out there. And, of course, you know, one thing to touch on here real quickly is that once you get into a series, the umpires move clockwise. So the guy at first is going to go to home. The guy at home is going to go to third. So you are looking at umpires for the next day. You know, the guy that's at first that night is going to be behind the plate the next night. So that's something for you to keep in mind as you're doing your umpire research study. But again, I think swishanalytics.com is a good one. And I believe Baseball Prospectus has some stuff too. And like I said, I didn't get a chance to check it here before today's show, but I would certainly look over there. They may have some really in-depth stuff because they incorporate a lot of PitchFX data into their analysis. Second mailbag question here from at NVC Podcast is, what are the best preseason or in-season narrative accounts of pitcher strengths and weaknesses? I'll start with the preseason. I don't think he did it this year. I don't think he had the time to do it. But Paul Sporer, I know he did it in 2015. I know he did it in 2016 and 2015. But he writes a starting pitcher guide that is absolutely incredible. There is a ton of research in this thing. He tiers all the starting pitchers as well, for those of you that play fantasy. Just a great, great publication. He used to have Doug Thorburn doing mechanics analysis of these pitchers. So that, of course, would help you gauging some injury risk as well. Like I said, I don't think he did it in 2017, but he has done it in the past. And if he goes back to it, that is the best guide that you're going to find for pitchers there in the preseason. As far as during the season, Jeff Zimmerman and Jeff Sullivan over at Fangraphs do some excellent work. Eno Saris does some good work talking with pitchers about pitch grips and some of the adjustments that they've made. David Lorilla, I apologize if I'm butchering his name. He does a Q&A thing on Sundays where he winds up talking to hitters and pitchers. You can find some good stuff in there. John Rogley does great work with pitchers and injuries. But ultimately for me, I think if you're looking for in-season accounts of pitcher strengths and weaknesses, you have to go to specific sites for teams. You have to go to the blogs that those teams have, whether it's SB Nation or Fansided or something that's independent. That's where you're going to get the best work. Because when you look at the national guys, Zimmerman, Sullivan, Rogley, Carey, all the others that are out there that do great work nationally, they can't watch every game. And the smaller team-centric blogs are going to watch every game. For example, Joe Schwartz over at Viva El Berdos, that was the Cardinals SB, that is the Cardinals SB Nation blog, did some great stuff on Carlos Martinez, had a lot of GIFs, had a lot of really insightful stuff over there. He's since moved on to a different site, which is called the Intrepid. But niche sites can dig deeper into the pitchers and their issues because they're watching that team more intently. National guys are going to pick up on trends of, hey, look at this guy. He's worked five straight good outings. What has he changed in his usage? Then they write an article about it. But these local sites, the smaller blogs that are team-centric, that's where you're going to get the in-depth analysis. Because you have a lot of people out there, just because they're not on the national landscape doesn't mean they don't know what they're talking about. A lot of these people just have other jobs right as a hobby, but they have an interest in analytics and an interest in the game of baseball. So they find a place to write. And you can get some really, really strong stuff from those people. Also, the Fangraphs community section, there's some good stuff there. Those are just people that have guest submissions that are maybe trying to get found or just, trying to share their work with other people. You can find some really good, lots of analytical stuff in there. There's some heavy numbers dives in that community section. Like I said, I think the best place to go is where people know the players the best. And that's those smaller blogs where they're watching every single game. Because, when you're a national guy and you got to follow 30 teams and 150 starters and everything else, that's a lot. It's a lot to take in. So I would definitely look, follow some of those sites on Twitter, or you can get, I believe SB Nation has a directory page where you can get links to all their blogs. That would be the way that I would go in terms of looking at pitcher strengths and weaknesses in season, is to go pretty much straight to the source, or even the beat writers. Sometimes the beat writers will have some stuff there as well. Question from at CapperT1211 on Twitter. What is the best source of accurate weather forecasts for ballparks, possibly including wind out to which field? Two that I like for this, dailybaseballdata.com is a really good one. And then Swish Analytics also is a good one. They have the wind direction, they have humidity, weather conditions, wind speeds, all that type of stuff. Those things are over there, both at Daily Baseball Data and then also Swish Analytics. At MikeyDFS86 on Twitter asked, do you take a similar approach to the first couple of games after the All-Star game as you would before the break? Now, we're kind of past that point a little bit. We've got a series done. But I do think that you could extend this because you've got a lot of pitchers here. They're going to be working on long layoffs. For example, Robbie Ray, who's going to pitch tomorrow night for Arizona, won't have pitched since July 6th. 12 days off is a very, very long time. Again, you're used to throwing side sessions. You're used to being consistent with your routine. And I'll talk about that a little bit more in my preview of the week ahead. But that's something that is a real thing here coming out of the All-Star break. And, you pitch for the first time in 12 days, then you go on your regular 4 days rest, and that can be a little bit of a shock to the system. So I do think that that's a really big deal. Now, the break can help refine a pitch, rehab an injury, something like that for both pitchers, and also rehab injuries for hitters as well. But it's always best to be careful coming out of these things that are, you know, unique. You don't get 4 days off in a row during the Major League Baseball season. You might get 2 days off in a row. You have a scheduled off day and a rainout, something like that. You're not going to get 4 days off in a row all that often. I mean, it happened to the Indians and the Mariners in 2007 when their opening series at then Jacobs Field was snowed out. They had to reschedule for doubleheaders throughout the season. They had 4 days off right after starting the year. That was extremely unique. But you don't really get that anymore here nowadays. So, you know, I think it's also a tough time with the trade deadline coming up. You know, you're 2 weeks away from the trade deadline. Lots of uncertainty on an individual and a team level. You know, excuse me, for individuals, do I have to move? Do I have to move my family? Do I have to go to a city I don't know? On a team level, are we going to buy? Are we going to sell? Are we going to lose some of our teammates? You know, it's a tough time for sure. Now, you can capitalize on some of those things if you feel like you have a good feeling for a team or for an individual. But ultimately, you know, yeah. And again, too, I mean, I don't want to sound overly conservative or anything like that, but this has been such a unique baseball season that I've talked about limiting exposure throughout the year. Just the home run craze, so many injuries with the 10-day disabled list, just been a tough year overall. So hopefully you do have a lower volume of plays. And again, you know, coming out of something like the All-Star break, it certainly makes sense. Now, do you want to prey on a pitcher that, you know, like, we'll take Robbie Ray as an example again. Robbie Ray is a guy that strikes out a lot of hitters, but gives up a lot of walks as well. And up until this year, had a big home run problem. Does he have a feel for his arsenal on Tuesday night after not pitching for 12 days? I don't know. But that could be a wagering angle that you could look to play here. So let's look at that week ahead, beginning with Detroit and Kansas City. You've got the world's most pathetic pillow fight going on in the AL Central right now. Does anybody step up? Do the Indians get this thing going? Does somebody step up to challenge them? Because to me, and yeah, I'm an Indians fan, but I've been anything but biased about the team this year. You know, they don't have a challenger in this division. I understand that there are a couple teams that are a game and a half or 2.5 or 3.5 out or whatever. They still don't have a challenger to me in this division. Do the Tigers step up? Do the Royals step up? Does one of those two teams, you know, make a move here? And obviously it would have to be Kansas City because Detroit is pretty far out of this thing now. But you got a 4-game series opening up here at Kauffman Stadium. Jordan Zimmermann and Jason Vargas tonight. And as I mentioned, big move on the Tigers here for this one. You've got Matt Boyd, Travis Wood, a couple of southpaws tomorrow. Justin Verlander, Jason Hamill on Wednesday. Michael Fulmer, Danny Duffy on Thursday. 3 lefties here for the Tigers. Again, very right-handed heavy lineup. Got a chance for some of those older guys to get a break during the All-Star break. Miguel Cabrera needed it. Ian Kinsler was able to get a little bit healthier. You know, Victor Martinez obviously has all of his issues. So theoretically, these are good matchups for the Tigers, but they're also on the verge of being a seller. J.D. Martinez is going to go at some point. Justin Wilson probably goes at some point. You've got talks about Verlander and Cabrera if some team is stupid enough to let the Tigers off the hook for those two deals. So lots going on with this series. The Royals have played a lot better. You know, they got off to that hellacious start, and then now they've played a lot better. Did they step up? Can they take 3 out of 4 here? Can they close the gap if the Indians struggle? You know, lots going on in this series, but again, not a real sexy series to try and break down by any means. Cubs and Braves, John Lester, Julio Teheran tonight, John Lackey, Sean Newcomb tomorrow, Mike Montgomery, R.A. Dickey on Wednesday. Will the Cubs keep up this offensive onslaught? Is it time to make that push to catch Milwaukee? And again, I'm curious to see how the Cubs are going to be priced. We see money come in on them today with Lester against Teheran, but Tehran's been faded a lot. Does money come in tomorrow with John Lackey coming off the DL against Sean Newcomb, who's actually pitched fairly well? Does the market play Mike Montgomery on Wednesday against R.A. Dickey? It's going to be very interesting to see what happens with the prices here in this series because, again, if the Cubs blow out the Braves tonight, score 10 runs again, have 37, 38 runs in the last 4 games, and the offense got going a little bit before the break as well, that perception is going to change. People are going to say, okay, this is the Cubs we expected. I will play them at any number. So watching the market with the Cubs is going to be very, very interesting here over the next few weeks. As far as the Braves, as I mentioned, they're a 500 team with a negative run differential. What happens with them here in this series? Are they able to keep pace with the Cubs? You know, are they able to possibly, you know, start to string something together here. I mean, it looks like a playoff spot, probably a pipe dream for a lot of teams right now in the National League because it's just such a top-heavy league. But can they put something together here? We'll find out. Arizona and Cincinnati, you've got the Everybody Loves Ray Romano matchup on Tuesday, Zach Greinke, Tim Adelman on Wednesday, Taiwan Walker, Luis Castillo on Thursday. Will the Diamondbacks keep progressing? I mean, you look at this series for them, they have an advantage in all three pitching matchups, but they're on the road. You know, obviously we know Chase Field's a very good offensive park. They have that offensive regression and high leverage situations with that BABIP with runners in scoring position. Robbie Ray hasn't pitched in 12 days. Taiwan Walker, you know, he was okay in that game against the Braves there over the weekend, but we've seen money come in on the Reds with regularity. Does that happen again here in this series? Because it looks like Arizona is a fade team in the marketplace. They are to me. So does it happen in this series? Because Arizona will be a big favorite on Tuesday, big favorite on Wednesday, smaller favorite on Thursday. I would not be surprised to see Reds team come in all three games of this series. If you want to take a shot here, I think the Reds series price does make a little bit of sense. You know, they probably need to get Tuesday's game, but with Robbie Ray having that 12-day layoff and also that left on base percentage regression, it was what, 94% over his last 10 starts, something like that? Could be a spot to look to go against the Diamondbacks. So the Reds could be in decent shape here in this series if you want to look to gamble on some underdogs. Cleveland and San Francisco, the Indians, embarrassing series. They got swept in Oakland. Now they go to a National League park without a DH. So one of Edwin Encarnacion or Carlos Santana will not be in the lineup unless they do something crazy like put Santana in the outfield, and that certainly is a possibility. Or even, who knows, put him at third base. They could do that with Jason Kipnis out, put J-Ram at second. Who knows what they decide to do here in this series. I don't think they'd put Santana at third, but might as well try anything at this point because the Indians just can't seem to get this thing going. They should because you've got Josh Tomlin and Matt Moore on Monday night, Mike Clevinger, Ty Block on Tuesday, Carlos Carrasco, Matt Cain on Wednesday. These are three matchups that should be very, very good for the Indians hitters. But there have been matchups this year where they should have been good, and they haven't been. So pretty interesting series here. The Giants have been much scrappier of late, but it's very, very tough to back the Giants with Matt Moore, Ty Block, and Matt Cain. So I'll be very curious to see how the movement goes for this series. If anybody wants to touch this series, there's still that sentiment about the Indians that they're going to get this thing going. And I certainly think that at some point they do. I wouldn't bet on it right now. But wouldn't surprise me to see Indians money come in all three games of this series. It's come in a little bit here on Monday night. I certainly think it comes in tomorrow because nobody wants to back Ty Block. And then Carrasco should be betting to a bigger favorite against Matt Cain on Wednesday, even though the Indians are wrapping up this West Coast trip and heading home to take on Toronto. But man, the Indians are just such a hard team to peg right now. I won't be looking to do it, but I do think that the market that plays the numbers will be looking to take the Indians here in this series. So as I mentioned, really excited for tomorrow's Tuesday Takeover show with Mark Meltzer. Covers everything there is to cover out there in Vegas with the gambling industry and also the hotels and those other properties that are out there. So that should be a whole lot of fun on our Tuesday Takeover show for this week. But that'll do it for this edition of the Bettors Box. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And remember that you will never strike out when you're in the Bettors Box.